From London, we present Orbit 10, a play in 6 episodes by Peter Elliott Hayes. Episode 2, The Cylinder.
This is Tom Lambert. You've now heard the first of the tape recordings made by Dr. Hayward Petrie. In it, he described his visit to Skara in the Hebrides, where Professor McLaren was in charge of the giant radio telescope, the strange pattern of signals that were being monitored, and the finding in a lonely cove of a vibrating cylindrical object. Already the thing we would come to fear was taking shape. In this, the second recording, Dr. Petrie continues his notes from that point.
Notes, Reel 2. Where was I? Oh, yes, that blustering day on Skara. McLaren and I were at work in the underground monitoring room when Clifford and Elizabeth returned from Dromed Point. Returned with a curious account of a cylinder buried under a beach. They seemed so impressed that we took McLaren's ancient car and drove round the coast to see for ourselves. Before we left, Clifford insisted on collecting 4 spades. There was the cold, deserted bay and the beach. We were led down a cliff path and shown a spot where they'd scratched out the sand. We each took a spade and dug, and in less than an hour, we had uncovered a most remarkable object.
It's a cylindrical shape, all right. 3 feet in diameter and about 8 feet long. But what it is under all that incrustation...
Could it be some kind of natural formation?
It's very regular. It almost looks like part of a pillar. But this is hardly an archaeological site. Clifford, you say you heard a humming sound.
Well, yes. I guess it must have stopped while we were away. But Liz heard it, too.
And there was that disturbance while the sea was still covering it.
Yeah, very curious. Well, what now? The tide will cover this spot again before long.
Well, we've enough on our hands, but I suppose this is worth spending a little time on, though what we can do here...
Hey, can I make a suggestion?
Go ahead.
I noticed a crane truck back at the telescope.
Yes, the transporter for heavy equipment.
Well, the road meets the beach farther along.
So it does.
The crane and maybe some chain tackle. Well, look, I've driven bulldozers back home. I guess I can handle that.
Well, it's the only way we'll ever get this thing out. All right with you, Campbell?
Yes, of course.
Very well. It's your operation, Clifford. Oblige me by not breaking your neck over it.
No, sir.
Or that crane, because that's something the college will have to pay for.
I'll be careful, sir.
I gave no more thought to the object until the following afternoon. Then, looking down from the telescope control room, I saw the transporter pull up by the generator block. Clifford emerged from the cab and supervised the efforts of 3 resigned islanders he'd pressed into service to haul the cylinder into the building. It seemed his salvage scheme had been successful, and that the object was lighter than I had imagined. That same evening, we found Clifford, Elizabeth, and Peter Garrick in one of the basement rooms, surveying their trophy with some pride. They had mounted it on trestles, and Garrick was armed with a hammer and a cold chisel. Lying there under the hard, white strip lights, the corroded cylinder might well have been the corpse of some hoary sea beast.
This really is interesting. I've been taking measurements. The ends are perfect circles, 34 inches in diameter, and slightly domed. It's 90 inches long. If I can chip away some of these deposits, we can see what it's made of.
Well, if it turns out to be solid gold, let us know. We'll be up in the signal box.
Right, sir.
I'd be glad if you'd come and take some notes, Clifford.
Yes, sir.
And you, Elizabeth.
Yes, sir.
I'll be up shortly. I'll just make a start on this.
Leaving young Garrick chipping away, we went up in the lift,
to the glass-walled control room beneath the vast bowl of the telescope. And again we watched the dancing green traces on the oscilloscopes and listened to those thin, insistent signals reaching us across 5,000 million miles of space.
Hello. That sequence sounds familiar. Where's Garrick's chart? He's taken photographs of all the recurring waveforms. Yes, this looks like it.
It's very similar.
We got this on August 9th last.
And before that on May the 3rd.
You see, Hayward, it is systematic. There's method, intelligence behind this.
Intelligence? But that means life in some form. Life on the outermost edge of the solar system, where no life can conceivably exist.
Because of the conditions. Unimaginable cold, utter darkness.
Poisonous atmosphere of methane and ammonia.
Yes, no life as we understand it.
I wonder.
Another layer underneath. Gray like fused metal. And hard. Can't make a mark on it. Beats me how a thing like this came to be on the... What? Oh, yes. They said this happened before. Must be some kind of stored energy inside. What was I going to... I can't think, was it... Oh, it's cold. I suppose I ought to... What? What's that? How did it get in? I must get through to...
Can you hear me? What happened?
Oh, a mist. Cold. Oh, it's you, Doctor. My hand is burning.
Has he burnt it?
No, cold has done that. Extreme cold. I think it's come very near to being frostbitten. Here, take my jacket. Wrap his arm up in it.
Peter, what was it?
Why, I was chipping the crust away, and then the humming started.
The humming?
It came from... from inside. Not loud, but I couldn't think straight. And then suddenly there was a kind of fog everywhere.
Fog?
I leaned against the cylinder. It was like touching a red-hot stove. And after that, I don't know.
You reached the alarm bell, laddie, and passed out. We saw that vapor, too, when we came in. Places like a refrigerator now, but outside it's...
Well, another mystery for our collection, Campbell. Your cosmic noise and now this.
Hello. That's curious.
What are you staring at?
Well, that shelf. There were some things on it earlier. A couple of spare transformers, spare pliers. Has anyone moved them?
No, I didn't. No one else has been down here.
Well, perhaps I'm mistaken, but I could have sworn... Well, this is a remarkable find of yours, Clifford. Now we shall have to investigate it. Because I'm sure of one thing. It's not solid. There is something inside it.
Later that night, we held a conference. The cylinder clearly possessed some disturbing properties. At Kerkuish, there were no facilities for investigating it thoroughly, but in my own modern laboratory at the college, well, with some regret, I proposed that we return to London and somehow take the cylinder with us. And McLaren agreed. He was as curious as myself, but could spare no more time from his study of the signals. Well, a lot of arranging had to be done. But Clifford and Elizabeth did their share, and 3 days later we left Skara on the island steamer. The cylinder went with us, cradled in straw and enclosed inside a stout crate. Even as I watched it being hoisted aboard at Kirkcudbright, the case swinging from the derrick had an oddly forbidding appearance. Why I should have felt that then, I don't know. But all the way back to Glasgow, it was just a confoundedly awkward piece of luggage. However, eventually we were relaxing on the express to London, with our trophies safely stowed in the luggage van at the rear of the train. Out of sight, but hardly out of mind.
Peter Garrick was much better when we left.
Yeah. The doc in the island thought he was lucky not to have lost his fingers. I don't get it, sir. What could have caused a sudden temperature drop like that?
I've no idea, Clifford. But we mustn't go leaping to any science fiction conclusion. Possibly some freak condition peculiar to that cellar. And then the humming from the cylinder. Well, certain elements can resonate in magnetic fields. There was a lot of electrical equipment nearby.
But there wasn't on that beach.
And that mist. Something about the way it moved.
It's the material that interests me. Under the sea crust that Garrick chipped away, there was another layer, rough and metallic. It reminded me of something that...
We're slowing down. Stopping. It can't be Carlisle yet.
Where's your tickets, please? Thank you. Thanks. Oh, thank you, sir.
What have we stopped for, Inspector?
Oh, seems they're having a little trouble up front with the locomotive.
One of the new diesels, isn't it?
Yes, but it hasn't been pulling properly for the last few miles.
Yeah, I noticed that.
Losing power, a motor fault, I suppose. If the motormen can't trace it, we'll have to get a relief sent up from Carlisle. We hope the delay won't be too long.
Yes, I wonder.
What is it, Doctor? Anything wrong?
I don't know. These last few days, perhaps I'm getting foolish ideas. Anyway, it won't do any harm to make sure. Will you two come with me? I'm going down to the luggage van.
Sure. Just a moment, sir. Looking for something?
You have a crate of mine in here, guard. Would you mind if we take a look at it?
That'll be all right. That big fella, isn't it? Machinery of some sort.
Machinery? What makes you think that?
Oh, I heard a sort of humming sound noise somewhere back.
Where?
Well, it seemed to be coming from the case. Thought that some electrical gadget had managed to switch itself on. Stopped after a bit, though.
Here it is. Hasn't exploded anything. Just the same as it was when it came aboard at Glasgow.
Cliff, it isn't. The crate's a different color. Why is the wood white like that?
Search me.
Funny sort of weather, this. Of course, you get all sorts up north this time of year. But it turned so blooming cold in here about a quarter of an hour ago. I had to put my coat on. They had nipped my ears, too. Oh, we're off again.
It seems to be covered in some kind of powder.
Don't touch it again, my dear. Come away from it. That's not powder. It's frost. The rest of the journey after that was uneventful. At Euston, 6 porters heaved the crate onto a waiting lorry sent from the college, and we followed to Kensington in a taxi. The college was empty and echoing, as it always is in vacation time, and the smell of dust and age had come back into its own. With the aid of 2 boilermen and Simmons, the head caretaker, we took the crate up in the goods lift and dragged it through the silent corridors to my laboratory. It was late in the afternoon. We were tired. But any idea of waiting until the next day to begin work just didn't occur to us. We dismantled the crate and mounted the cylinder on a long workbench, wedging it with wooden blocks and arranged floodlights to work by. The first thing I did was to examine the place where Garrick had flaked away the white coating of seagrowth. before the Atlantic started on it, as it was probably when it first became submerged. Gray, hard, and honeycombed with small bubbles. From these streaks, I should say traces of iron, copper, and nickel.
It looks almost like a volcanic rock. Lava.
No, no, this has been fused by a much higher temperature. Now, what? Yes, of course. I know where I've seen this before. On the surface of meteorites.
Meteorites? But they get scorched up.
Entering the Earth's atmosphere, yes. Well, the condition is similar. Clifford.
Sir?
Get the keys from Simmons and go down to the engineering department.
Okay.
Find some mallets and chisels. The heavier the better. What I want to know is, what is underneath this? Under those glaring lamps, we chipped away like three sculptors inspired. Only we had no conception of what was taking shape under our tools. Beneath the outer crust was a solid layer, an inch thick, of fused mineral matter. When we had cleared one end of the cylinder, we attacked that. And that, too, we eventually got through to bare metal, bright silver. A metal cylinder. Our basic question was answered. It cannot have formed naturally. Whatever it was, it had been constructed. For a long time, we contemplated that smooth, gleaming surface. We had no suggestions, no theories. And then, and it seemed the only thing to do, we began to enlarge the area we had uncovered. Outside, the lamps came on in Cromwell Road and theatre-bound taxis hustled on their way. By 8 o'clock, we had bared one entire end of the cylinder. There it lay, bright under the lights, like the end of a monstrous metal cigar case. At 8:10, I laid my mallet and chisel on the bench. Well, no point in going on with this all night. It will take days to clear the whole surface. And then the only way in will be with an oxyacetylene torch. No, it's going to be a long job.
Mm-hmm.
And not necessarily one for us.
How do you mean?
Well, I'm beginning to wonder whether we mayn't be risking blowing ourselves and the college sky high.
Some wartime beauty, you mean. That got washed up on Scarab. Yeah, we thought of that on the beach.
It's possible. I think first we ought to have an expert opinion. I suppose the Ministry of Works are the people.
But a bomb, a rusty mine, could that cause anything to happen now? I mean, what we saw?
I don't know, Elizabeth. It seems about as sinister now as a stick of Brighton rock. Look, I think we should all go home. Tomorrow we'll reconsider it. Will you both be here at 11?
Certainly.
Good. Put those lights out, will you, Elizabeth?
Right. Here's your coat, Doctor.
Thank you. We can leave everything as it is. You're coming, Clifford?
Hmm? Oh, yeah, sure. Don't forget your briefcase, please.
No, thanks for reminding me.
We went down in the lift across the dark entrance hall with its spreading dome and enormous crystal chandelier, and I said good night to my students on the steps outside. Then I hailed a taxi to take me to my house in Eaton Square. Clifford and Elizabeth walked away towards South Kensington Tube Station. It began to rain. 10 minutes later, I understand, they were sitting in a coffee bar in the Fulham Road.
My chisel arm's stiffening up already. Well, what now?
8:30. You can take me to the pictures if you like.
A movie at this time? Liz, you surely can throw off the cares of the working day.
No point in brooding over this. We have some unexplained phenomena, an unidentified object. It just means experimenting until we find the answers.
Just like that. And I'm the one without imagination. Me, I keep thinking of that enormous great thing sitting up there like an overturned idol.
Almost as if it's watching us. How silly. Just a slab of metal.
Yeah. You know, Petrie didn't notice it. Could be just a scratch. On the other hand, if there is a way in...
What do you mean?
Well, I guess I should have mentioned it to Prof. I'm never going to sleep with this on my mind. And it won't take long to check. You coming?
Where to?
Back to the college.
What, now?
Yeah. Simmons will open up for me. Just a question of whether it's a line or a crack.
A line or a crack?
Yeah. Come on. Hey, swing that lamp a bit this way, will you?
All right.
Yeah, fine. Hey, this is it, Liz. You see here a thin line running right around the end of the cylinder. Ah, this wire's too thick. I know. Cigarette paper. That's it. Now, the thing is, will it? Yeah, it slides in. It is a crack, and deep.
Then the end, this whole section, must be... Wait, Jeff, listen. Someone's coming. Who could be? Not Simmons. He doesn't walk like that.
Shh, wait.
Well, it would appear that great minds do think alike.
Dr. Petrie, we had no idea you were
coming back. Neither had I until I got home and tried to forget all this. What an odd thing curiosity is. For some reason, I felt this couldn't wait. You do, I imagine.
Well, not exactly, sir. I noticed this earlier on.
What?
This hairline around the circumference. I've tested it, and it's a crack.
A crack?
Yeah. So this whole end section was plugged. It could come off.
Well done, Clifford. This is important.
You see, it won't move or turn. But there's something else here on the end face. Two holes about a foot apart.
Yes. Sockets for a key. If we can find something to fit them.
The engineering floor.
Oh, of course.
They have every kind of plate key down there. I'll be right back.
All right, good man. Now, if this end is removable, it's been made so for a purpose. And that, Elizabeth, can only be...
Because there is something inside.
Yes.
It seemed an age before Clifford returned with an assortment of bronze steel keys. We found one that fitted the sockets exactly. Even as I felt its grip, I hesitated. Should we go on? Should we take a calculated risk? Looking back on that night, I can understand why none of us seriously considered doing anything else. We understood so little then. Clifford and I hauled on the key. After a few seconds, the whole end of the cylinder began to turn. A few inches, and then it stuck. We threw our weight on it, and then it was turning freely. A fine, polished thread crept slowly into sight. The gap between the plug and the casing steadily widened.
I think we're nearly there. Better be ready to catch this when it comes clear.
Yes, turn slowly. Elizabeth, stand back, please. Could I stop a moment?
Something wrong?
I want to listen. Escaping gas. Anything. No. Nothing. All right.
Go on, hit it slowly.
Yeah. It's coming.
Now hold it, don't let it drop.
I've got it. Now let it down. That's it.
Elizabeth, quickly, can you see anything?
It's hollow. There's a cavity. But it seems to be empty.
What? Yes. A hollow barrel about 18 inches across.
Hey, look at the thickness of that casing.
9 inches of solid metal at least. This doesn't go in very far. There's something blocking it. Elizabeth, bring that lamp down here. That's it. Now. Yes. The hole goes in for about a foot, and then just a shiny surface.
It looks like glass. Green.
There it is. That humming.
Is that what you heard before?
Yes, but much louder.
I don't understand it. This enormous thing and nothing inside, but unless... Bring the lamp nearer. No, nearer, nearer. Yes. It must be.
Well, what else can there be? There's no other way in.
But don't you see? That green substance, it's solid. And it isn't attached to the casing. It must run the full length inside.
You mean...
The cylinder is just a shell, a container, to protect some kind of inner core, something green and hard.
Polished to a perfect fit that could be slid in.
And then the casing kept and sealed, and that'd keep it intact for, well, any sort of journey.
If it went in like that...
It should come out the same way.
Doctor, you said a journey. How long a journey? Where does this thing come from?
I don't know, Elizabeth, and at the moment we'd better not speculate. We can't turn back now. We must know the truth for, well, for better or worse.
But how can we drag it out? There's nothing to get a grip on.
There might be a way. Yes, look. That roof span up there. Some chain and a pulley.
Yeah, upend the casing and lift it off.
It's the only way. Come on. We worked feverishly into the early hours. Again, we raided the engineering department, dragging up hooks, chains, and pulley blocks. We rigged a tackle over the cylinder, attaching the block to the steel span which crossed overhead, and shackled the lifting chain securely around and closed the end. And all the time, the thing on the bench continued to hum, softly and insistently. The chains swung and tightened. Slowly, the massive cylinder reared upright on the bench. There was a terrifying moment when it rocked and almost toppled, but then it settled firmly on its open end. There was a sliver and a thud. The core had shifted. We went on dragging at the chain. The pulley clattered and our hands became slippery with grease. With nerve-wracking slowness, the casing rose, exposing inch by inch the thing it contained and guarded. It was a rod, an enormous green rod. It was solid and transparent. But embedded in it was a fantastic tracery of fine silvery wires, a glittering spider's web of strange branching patterns, and every gleaming vein converged to one point. A hollow cavity in the heart of the crystalline mass. A round bubble containing something gray and bulbous. Something that looked like a fine sponge. Something which expanded and contracted rhythmically, pulsing with fierce, vital energy.
That was Orbit 10, a play in 6 episodes written by Peter Elliott Hayes and produced for the BBC by David Davis.